Welcome to episode 204 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Mick and Marty. How are we, guys?
Going well, Jace. The stock market, very interesting. I feel one day I'm getting wealthier. Next day I'm going broke. Lots of things going on. Volatility. We love it. How do we deal with it? I don't know. Nick, how are you?
Oh, mate, I'm good. But, you know, I think volatility is part of life these days, isn't it? You know, I think the one thing COVID did was it taught us that things can be bad and things can get better. So, you know, I just think back to those days and all the doom and gloom, and you know, look where we are now. Sun shining in Melbourne. Everywhere else, I guess, if it's shining in Melbourne, it is everywhere else. You know, D's are pushing for the finals. I won't say when we're recording this, but there's definitely some finals chat around. Not the D's, the Dons. Yeah. So, you know, things always get better, Marty.
We are a little bit early on this podcast. When we're recording, but Jason and I have had the discussion as to say whether we go, "You beauty, the Dons have won the flag," and then we go, "There's no frigging hope in hell that that's going on." So we'll just keep quiet. Jason, how are you?
Good. We're definitely not re-recording this intro, so whatever ends up happening happens, and maybe we'll revisit our predictions from the start of the year and just show how wrong we were. Back to the conversation we're having earlier. I always find the conversations around stock market interesting, whether it's up or down or what's happening on any given day. We've got the great man Nick Riley here today to take us through a bit of a conversation around, you know, just how we get it right, regardless of what the market's doing. And we have seen over the course of history, there are all sorts of events that happen. And, just before I throw to you, Nick, you know, the example I have of what gets me through day to day is not bloody looking at it, because, whenever it gets me, you know, stressed or concerned is when one of the team in the office turned around and said, "Jace, did you see what happened to Xero shares today?" And I'm going, I don't want to know, because I don't want to make a decision or a reaction to what's going on. So I tend to get in and turn a blind eye, and that's me. But I'm hoping you can give me a little bit more, context and some ideas around, you know, I guess, correct asset allocation and take it from there.
Yeah, well, look, it's fantastic that you do that. But the reality is 99.99% of people, including myself, can't switch off and can't do that.
Can I admit to something?
You look every day.
No. The only reason that I don't react is I forgot my login to my share trade, and it's such a pain in the ass to reset it that by the time I've reset it, I've gotten over it. So I just haven't logged in. So that's my and not maybe not a bad strategy for people out there that can't help themselves. There you go.
There's a hack right there.
But you're sleeping better.
Correct.
So, yeah, look, the reality is that we all look and we can't help it. But I think if we are educated and have an understanding of why markets do what they do, it means we can look every day and, you know, if things are set up correctly, you can still sleep easy no matter what happens. And this was triggered by some volatility we had in the market not so long ago, and some real volatility. You know, we had Japan's Nikkei was down 12.5% in a day. They actually suspended trading over there, so it didn't get any worse. I think the ASX, from memory, was down around 6% over a couple of days, and the S&P 500 in the States was down 10% or something from its peak. And what happens in today's investing world, I guess, is it's very easy to sell stocks compared to what it used to be like. You know, if you wanted to sell a stock and, you know, Marty was your broker, you'd ring Marty up, he'd fill a form out, he'd probably fax that form off somewhere, it'd go to a trading house, and who knows how long it'd take for the stock to actually sell. Now, brokers just simply press a button and things will be sold, number one. And now you've also got ETFs, so exchange-traded funds that hold big parcels of certain stocks. And you know, if those stocks go down, they will have triggers in there to sell those stocks off. And because you're aggregating so much money, when they make a decision to sell, it has a significant impact on the stock price. So what you're seeing now is really quick moves based on the decisions that are being made versus one that might have been dragged out. So it can look, I will say, badder than it is, because you get immediate impact versus maybe that impact over a few days. But you know, we'll this in this particular period, you know, as I said, the S&P was down maybe 10% from its peak, but it also jumped around 20% in the last 12 months. So, you know, it's something like what happened recently was bound to happen, because when things are good for a very long time, and things have been good since COVID, we're recording this in 2024. The last crash we had, I guess, was COVID, which was 2020, was that? 2020?
March, April 2020. Yeah.
So it's been good times for a very long time. And, you know, cycles would suggest that at some stage things come off the boil. So I thought it'd be a really good time to just remind people of the importance of asset allocation and, number one, what it is, and number two, how it should be set up for you based on your individual circumstances without giving advice. So that when the volatility in the market exists, and it'll never not exist. It'll come and go at times, but it'll always be there. Have you got your asset allocation, not just in the share market, but across all of your investments, whether it's property, cash, whatever it might be, that volatility in the share market, you know, doesn't impact your sleep? How's that sound, Jase?
I like it. And that means if I can figure out how to get into my share trade, it might stop me from being trigger happy and doing something silly.
Yeah, Marty, any tips there on how Jase can log in?
I'll leave the tech stuff to Jase, but I would say, again, just having a discipline around your investing as well, like having principles around it. So when those swings do happen, that you're not reactive and emotive, because it's so easy to say, oh yeah, when the dip comes, I'll be able to deal with it. As soon as it happens, everyone's hitting that button. Sell, 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 sell. And then that causes a problem. So again, you got to know why, what your goals are, what your strategy is, and to have that managed. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say about the asset allocation, because that's always interesting to me, is to go, you know, how should we be looking at that? Because otherwise we're kind of stock picking, or, you know, or the financial planners are doing funds. So yeah, just interested.
Yeah, and I actually really like what you said there, because you're spot on, because it's all good and well to run through some things around asset allocation, and this is the plan I need to stick to. But it's difficult to do that when everything's either going down or everything's going up and you want to buy more. So you really do need to stick to your principles. And if you can't do that, if you're someone that can't stick to your principles, then find a way that can happen without your intervention. So whether that's through a financial planner, number one, or it's through a particular ETF that's going to manage that for you, and don't give yourself access to it. So, but if you set a strategy or a plan up and you don't stick to it, I wouldn't say it's pointless, but it can all unravel pretty quickly, because you'll do the opposite of what you should do, which is what most people do, unless you're Warren Buffett, and he does the opposite to what we all do, and he's, you know, a very wealthy man. Anyway, so... To open it up, asset allocation. So, Jase, I'll pass it to you. What's the first thing you think about when I say asset allocation?
It'd be the split between, you know, what stocks I've got, for example, in Australia or the US, and then also probably going down further into tech versus different industries. So just making sure I've got a bit of a diversified portfolio is what I think of when you say asset allocation.
Good answer. Yeah. I'm going to simplify it even more, and I'm going to talk about two types of assets, and they are defensive and growth.
Ooh,
now, okay. Obviously, in those two buckets, you've got numerous assets, and you know, some of the ones you rattled off then for sure. But, you know, what's defensive and what's growth? So what's something, how much money do you want in assets that are not going to grow as much but are protected? So they're not going to have the volatility like we see in the stock market. And then what's a growth asset? So how much am I prepared to put into a growth asset? It's one that's going to go up and down a lot, but over the long term, it's probably going to have a better chance of going up at a bigger rate than the defensive asset would. So first thing is, you need to understand, what should I have in my defensive bucket and what should I have in my growth bucket? And that will be different for everyone. Some of the things that will determine that is how much money you have altogether. what stage of life you're in. So, for example, are you retired and no longer earning money and not going to be investing for too much longer? Well, then you're probably going to be okay with a more defensive style of asset. You're not chasing the growth. You might have enough money to last until you move on from this life. But as long as you understand that you're not chasing the growth, well, you're really protecting the capital base and making sure that, you know, the money that you've got is going to last you. Someone like yourself, Jace, who's got, you know, maybe 30, 40 years left investing in markets, probably 30 years of income generating left. So you're going to continue to add to your stockpile of money, so to speak. So you can probably afford to have more in the growth bucket. You're chasing bigger returns. The volatility is okay for you because you're still earning money. You've got a long time invested in the market. And we know that markets, you know, do go up and down, but over time they generally go up with some volatility in the middle. So it's understanding where you're at in life, and that will determine whether you should have the majority of your money in defensive or growth assets. Make sense?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, really good.
Yep. So to put it into an example, a lot of our retirees, for example, they will have a majority of their money in defensive. So we're just making sure that they've got enough money that they need to live on a daily basis or a yearly basis, whatever methodology we're working with. And then they might allocate a little bit of money, so money that they don't rely on, and try and get some more growth out of that through growth assets. So growth assets are things like stock markets, so volatile, but should generally go up. Property is a growth asset, not as volatile as stock markets. Again, not giving advice here, but historically talking, not as volatile. I'm talking about Australia here, that will go up. And a defensive asset would be something like a term deposit where you have a guaranteed return and you don't lose any capital. Or cash at the bank. You know, it's got a return of some type, which is variable, but you know that money is not going to go down. So you can rely on always having access to that money. A bond is another example. So it's also traded on the ASX. You can buy bonds. So again, your defensive assets will be capital stable. So very small chance of going backwards, but because of that low risk, you get less chance of a return. Growth assets, high growth, high chance of a risk or high chance of losing money. Make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess, you know, given, you know, the stock market hitting turbulence every, you know, every so often and whatnot, I guess, yeah, what I'm trying to say, especially the world you're in with financial planning, have you seen people get this wrong if they aren't monitoring their asset allocation? Like, let's say, you know, someone in their 50s, that hasn't started retirement planning and was thinking, yep, I'll be able to retire in a couple of years, and they cop some, you know, stock market hit because they're in all these growth assets. Is that something that happens? Like, or is it not that drastic?
It's usually the other way around. So I'll give you an example or a couple of examples. And you know, this is really sad, really. If we go back to 2020 when COVID happened, we're obviously financial planners. So the markets dropped, depending on when you were looking at them, but let's say they dropped around 30% plus at some stage. So what happened post-COVID is a massive upswing and recovery of the market. And, you know, I think 12 months later, it was back to where it was. So we actually had people that called our office maybe 8 months or 12 months past 2020 or the crash, had share portfolios or super funds but without advice attached. And when the market dropped 30%, actually were scared, which is fair enough, thought they were going to lose everything and sold and went to more defensive. So more defensive, if you're in the markets, more defensive is cash. So they sold, they go to cash. I've lost 30%. I need to stem the bleeding. I'm going to move it all to cash. They then sit on that for 12 months because they're worried. Whilst the market's recovering, they come back to us, or they come to us in 12 months time because they think things are back to normal and they should get in the market, and they've really just factored in a 30% loss, whereas they just had a stayed invested, all of that would have come back. So I guess rarely, and I'm only talking about mum and dad Australians, rarely do you see people have all their money in the share market And you know, they lose it all because we're generally the other way around. We probably are more conservative as a nation, really, particularly the current generation coming through to retirement, which is baby boomers. They're generally more conservative. So we probably see people too conservative. And the other issue that we've got in society at the moment is people are living longer. So you know, you need to have some of your investments allocated to growth to make sure that your superannuation or your investments or your stockpile is enough to actually, you know, fund you maybe to age 90, 95 instead of age, you know, 78, 80. So it's usually the other way around, as surprising as that might sound.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I just, Nick, in regards to, like, I'm just thinking defensive, like 52, and certainly don't do this because I'm doing it, but I Charlie is challenging me at the moment in regards to my Berkshire holding. So he says I've got too much in Berkshire B and I should be spreading that risk more. And I said to him, well, Charlie, listen to Dad here. You know, there's 41 stock that Buffett owns and, you know, he's got businesses as well. So I would see that as a defensive play. And a lot of people say, like on more growth stocks, more speculative stuff, I've always been of the opinion, this is my own principle, I will never allocate more than 10% to that. That's my play money. But I do see people going 90% on all the growth stuff that and look, I'm probably not balanced, certainly not balanced in what I do, but I just have a methodology that I like, that I feel like I'm safe. I like to be in major companies that I know are making money. And then if I have a little play, it'll be on the back end. But has Charlie got some merit there in regards to should I be in an EFT potentially that's safer and more defensive? Am I more susceptible having one stock like Berkshire?
I would suggest not. Look, because it's, even though it's, you're saying it's not a growth stock, it's still a stock. So it's still considered as a growth asset.
Yep.
And it's still considered as volatile. So, you know, when we're talking growth, we're not really comparing, you know, ASX 200 company versus another ASX 200 company. We're comparing being in the market versus being in a term deposit or a cash.
In cash, sure. Yeah, you know, okay.
Of course, there are more risky stocks. You know, let's start talking small caps or micro caps. Obviously, that's a different story and that's a little bit deeper. But that's also your play money. And, you know, I'll give you another example. Again, I look back to retirees and quite often, and this is not saying anyone should be a particular risk profile, but quite often they'll be a balanced risk profile when they're getting ready for retirement. So that will mean anywhere from 50 to 60% of their money is in defensive assets and 50 to 60% of their money is in growth, depending on, you know, how much they want to lean towards the other side of balanced. Now, what it means is that, okay, let's say you've got 50% of your money defensive and 50% of your money in growth. If the market drops by 50% and you've got 50% of your market of your money linked to that market or invested in that market, you're not in a position where you need to sell those funds or those stocks because the market's dropped by 25, 50%, whatever it is. Hypothetically, you had $1 million, so you've got $500,000 protected in defensive assets. So you know, let's say you've got a couple that's got a, you know, 100 grand a year living expenses, hypothetically, I'm just picking numbers here. If they've got 500K in defensive assets protected, they know they've got 5 years of their living expenses covered before they need to worry about realizing any of the growth assets, the other 500,000. Now, again, we can only go off historical data and look at what's happened, but what I can close to guarantee you is that if we have a situation like COVID where that money they had invested in growth assets drops by 30% over a 12-month period, there's every chance in 24 months it's going to be back to where it was. And they didn't need to sell any of those assets and they didn't need to realize any losses on those assets because the defensive assets was funding their lifestyle. Now, what's generally going to happen over time, if they stay invested, that money will continue to grow and grow and grow that's invested in growth stocks. And at some stage, it's probably going to be worth more than 500. That's just the reality if they never touch it. So what this is going a little bit deeper on this. So the next thing that we need to talk about is just maintaining that balance of the 50-50. So hypothetically, Marty, they've got 500K in defensive assets in cash. The 500,000 they had invested, we have a really good time in the stock market, and it, all of a sudden it's worth 600,000. So they now have got 500,000 defensive, 600,000 in growth. They're no longer 50-50. So maintaining that risk profile means we will sell 50,000 of the gross assets to get it back to 550, and we'll have 550 in defensive then. So you're always maintaining that balance. And what you're actually doing is you're actually taking money off the table or profit off the table and readjusting that back to what your risk profile should be, which is the balanced. And that's where you go back to your initial comment around sticking to the process, sticking to the plan, sticking to the objectives. Because what most people will say is, oh, those growth assets are flying. I'm not going to touch them. They shoot up to 700 and then we have another COVID and all of a sudden they go back to 450. And you've missed your opportunity to take some money off the table. So it's constantly maintaining that risk profile for you and whatever that is. And that will very much be determined on where you're at in life, how much longer you've got on this planet, whether you've got the ability to continue to earn income, how long that money is going to be invested for. If it's only a two-year period, it's probably going to be more defensive because there's so much volatility that can happen that you don't want to be needing to sell something within a two-year period. If you've got a growth asset, you really want to be invested for a long time. So if there is some volatility, it doesn't matter. You can leave it in there and wait for it to come back to parity or back to where it was.
I love that balanced approach and just taking money off the table when it's there to rebalance. I wouldn't think a lot of the audience would be thinking about in general terms, but that's fantastic. And I think just with what the growth stocks have done recently, like I had Microsoft and Google, and I did take a bit because I thought it was sort of too high a percentage, and now bit of dumb luck too, right? I thought it was the right thing to do, and you know it's sort of proven to be a good thing because the rest of it's just come back at a rapid rate with the volatility. But if I hadn't have done that, more would have been at risk. But I like the fact that if I'm having those conundrums, you know, looking at it every day, imagine what everyday people that aren't looking at it every day are thinking. This is where that advice you just gave is real sage advice for people, you know, throughout their investment journey, but particularly coming into retirement too.
And I'll tell you where it gets even harder. And this is what really separates the normal person from someone like Warren Buffett. So as much as we're talking about taking profits to maintain your risk profile, if it is balanced, we're also talking about diving in a bit deeper when the market comes back. Because let's go the other way. Let's use the $1 million example. And let's say you've got the 500 and the 500, defensive 500, growth 500. Let's say the market comes back and the market comes back to and your growth assets come back to 400. So now you've got 900,000 in total. You've effectively lost 100K, right? But you've now got 500 defensive, 400 growth. So you've actually got too much defensive. So someone who's strict and sticking to the process will actually take 50 grand of that defensive, bring it back down to 450 and buy 50,000 worth of those growth assets that have just gone down by 100K to get back to the balanced. So now you've got 450. And then what should happen and historically happens is you'll get bigger uplift on that extra 50. And that is what if you went to an advisor, that happens automatically. We're doing that every 3 months for our clients. We're rebalancing every 3 months. We're taking money that's gone up. Where things are going down, we're reallocating. And that's what gets you the exponential compounding returns over time. You have to be confident about what you're invested in. So, you know, if we're talking growth assets within a super fund, you're generally in, you know, the ASX 500, the S&P 500. So these are not specky stocks. These are quality earning stocks that you know that if they have a dip, they're generally going to come back. As long as they're doing what the market's doing within reason and not going far outside that. I'm not saying, you know, if you have a micro cap stock that drops by 50%, you go buy more of it. Not at all. I'm talking about, you know, the ASX 200. So that is the hardest thing to do. Yeah, but that is what the likes of, you know, the expert investors do, and that's why they continuously make money, because they're really confident about what they're invested in. They know what it's worth, so when it drops, they buy more. It's pretty simple. And, you know, you're a big Warren Buffett fan, and that's what he basically does.
Oh, and it would be so anti-intuitive to put those defensive funds into those stocks at that time coming off a loss. So this is the important thing about the principles and, you know, having a plan of attack that's consistent no matter what the market's doing. But if that's just such great advice out there to the market, and boy, oh boy, are professionals helpful in these situations.
Well, yeah, I was about to say that. I'm so glad there's not something, you know, some people manage it themselves, but I'm so glad for myself. I sit back going, that's not something I want to be in control of and have to manage. I think, you know, meeting with a professional, obviously, you know, no disclaimer here, I've said it many times on the show, Innovate team and my financial planner, but having that initial meeting, revisiting it every year, you know, so we're looking at my age, we're looking at my financial goals, looking at my risk tolerance, and then my investment time horizon, and all those decisions then are made by a team who know what's going on in my life and Casey's life and where we're trying to get to. I don't have to think about the 3 monthly rebalancing or how this is going. It's just handled by a team of professionals that, you know, again, give a shit about where I'm trying to get to. So, yeah.
And the other key thing is you don't make knee-jerk decisions that are incorrect when markets are considerably volatile, because your profile has been set up in line with that volatility. Now, if you're someone who's closer to retirement or has got a more balanced risk profile, you're not going to feel the volatility as much as someone who's 100% invested in those stocks or in those growth assets. So, Jace, someone your age, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the market drops by 50% tomorrow, because as long as you're in good investments, you know they're going to come back. Someone else who's a bit older, it does matter. So while the market drops by 50%, their portfolio might be 70% protected in defensive assets, so they're only going to get a 15% drop, because only 30% of their exposure was to growth assets. So it's going to be different for every person. And we're not just talking about your asset allocation if you're invested in stocks. We're talking about you as an individual. So do you have property? Do you have stocks? What else have you got? Do you have some crypto? Okay, so what does your asset allocation look like as an individual? And, you know, for someone like yourself, Jason, I'm picking on you because I think a lot of listeners will be your age, but it's like, okay, well, I've got all these investments. What have I got protected? So yes, my risk profile is probably growth, but I want 30% or 20% of protected money that if something goes wrong with my business, or myself and my partner can't generate an income for 12 months, what have I got to fall back on that's defensive that'll get me through the 12 months, whether it's 12 months of living expenses or whatnot, so I don't have to sell the investments because the investments are there to grow. So your risk profile is not just about a particular fund. It's about your total assets and liabilities and, you know, what's your rainy day money, so you don't need to realize or sell investments or growth investments at the wrong time.
Yeah,
because the individual goes through all these emotions: market crash, FOMO, market crash, FOMO, and they're always buying counter-cyclical when they should be buying anyway. So it's to have an actual plan mapped out based on your goals. You've just got a template that's going to work over time, and it takes all the stress out of it. Otherwise, you're just a mess. So
a big part of us talking with our clients when we're explaining a risk profile and determining their risk profile, we're showing historic market performance. So they get a real understanding of why they are that particular risk profile and what that volatility means to them. So it also means that when things like this happen, they're not so worried. They're not so worried when the market's volatile, because they get it. They understand it. They've been educated on it. They know that, you know, whether they're exposed to it at a high level or a low level. So the education piece is huge. And the one last thing I want to say is that if you do experience some some high volatility, like the recent times and like in during COVID, do not make a decision on what to do if you are not 100% confident that it's the right one. Reach out to a planner, reach out to a friend that knows a planner. If you don't know one yourself, I always say the best people to call are us, of course, but also speak to someone and ask them, do they have a planner? Because it was truly sad when we had people come to us in 2021 who'd sat outside of markets for 12% and had missed all of the uplift from stocks that they'd sold. And if they just had advice or they haven't had a planner on board, their risk profile would have been right and they would never have felt the need to sell because they would have known that their fund was set up to deal with this volatility. So that's the one thing I would say. Don't make a decision if you're not confident you're making the right one. Get some help.
Off the back of all the potential, the volatile stuff that we've experienced over the coming weeks, there's plenty of murmuring out there in the Reserve Bank and whatnot. Is there any bright side to this market correction?
Oh, look, everything happens for a reason, right? And I think this one that we're referring to, it had to happen. Things don't go up in a straight line. It's been very good for a long time, so it needed a pullback. And the thing with stock markets is investors are always looking for a reason to sell. So as soon as they see a signal, particularly when you've had such a longevity of performance, there's a lot of profits to protect. So the minute that there's a signal that the market could be going backwards, they sell because they've got profits to protect. So it's all just cyclical. It goes up and it goes down. It generally needs to happen. So, I think what we're experiencing now needed to happen. We're in an environment at the moment where there's high interest rates. So hopefully this will see some movement that we want to see on interest rates coming down. I think we'll look back in 12 months and we won't even think about this, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure.
Marty Vids, what do you reckon? Crystal ball? I see you're rubbing it.
Well, it is. No, what I know is that, in the end, if we look back to those COVID times and even 2008 with the GFC, if you look back on the charts, you'd go, geez, I wish I had a bought then. Every time. And at the time, it's very different when you're emotive and you see, your stocks going down. People react. And I really like what you said about seek advice at those times, because there's only one thing more volatile than the market, and that's your emotions. Mm. And if you can control those and know that you've got a plan forward that you trust and you've got science behind that plan, and they say, history, don't take history on board, but I tell you what, it's a good indicator. Mm-hmm. So it's, I know we'll be looking back in 3 years' time from now going, gee, should have bought. Mm-hmm. Look how cheap it was. And and that's always the case. So ride the storm.
100%. Well, this is a reminder to you out there that if you're not sure of what your asset allocation is, or even wasn't sure what it was before you listened or watched this episode, might be time to get in touch with the team at Innovate to have your session to discuss your wealth plan for your future. So have a look at innovate.com.au. It's INOVAYT. And have a booking with the team and have a bit of a chat. You don't know what you don't know. So get in and find it out. Looking forward to whatever your long-term or short-term strategies are. Don't be like me and delete your password so that you can't get into your share trade account. Just partner with the right advisor to make sure somebody's got your back in those decisions. Nick, really loved the conversation around asset allocation and the stock market. Always really good things that we can implement and learn from your episodes that you bring to us. Until next time though.
You work hard for your money, make sure it works for you. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.